will be provided to the clerk as a part of the record and available for review. But the fact that they've been received, if they've been reviewed by council members, should be also disclosed as to their contents. If they covered, for example, traffic, they covered parking, if they covered whatever, so that those who are here and interested know what you may have learned somewhere else. The second thing is, because it's quasi-judicial, as the term applies, this is an evidential hearing. It will first be up to the staff to present the evidence in the terms of whether the request meets all the requirements of the code, and that is usually done in the form of their staff report, which you have in front of you, but that will be presented through the planning department. Once that is done, the applicant will present the applicant's evidence if it chooses, or it will stand on the presentations made by the city, which it is, or the town, which it is free to do. It will present, if it chooses, experts of its own, planners, traffic people, engineers, whomever. I don't know, but that is their right to do. So they get more time to present because the burden is on them to prove that they meet the standards under our code and comp plan to go forward. Either side, meaning the town side or the developer side, may choose to cross-examine, like you would see in a trial, certain witnesses. So, for example, their attorneys or whoever's representing them could cross-examine our planning staff. Our planning staff, or if you wanted to ask questions, you could cross-examine whatever experts they bring to the table. With the goal of those examinations, whether it's testimony directly from them or from the witnesses that they bring, is to determine whether or not, and this is important, they meet the criteria of the code by competent, substantial evidence, which leads me to the last point. This is a hearing in the sense of everything you might have ever seen on TV. It is about evidence. So while the public is permitted and welcome to speak and give opinions, unless those opinions are formulated in such a way that they can become evidence because of the speaker's background and education. Maybe a transportation engineer wants to talk about transportation, then it's not just opinion, it becomes evidence. If a real estate agent wants to talk about valuations to property, then it can be evidence that's competent and substantial. But if it's, I don't like it, that's not evidence. If it's, I think it's going to create more traffic, that's not evidence. If it's, I think it will cause damage to property values, that's not evidence. So the standard for competent substantial evidence is evidence which a reasonable, normal person would use in making a decision. So it is not lay opinion. It has to be based on something that can be sort of wrapped your arms around. At the end of the presentations, you will deliberate. That essentially means the discussion returns to council. And between you all come to a decision that will then ultimately make its way into a motion. If that motion is to approve, you will make that motion subject to whatever conditions that you see fit and or that the developer's council has agreed to or will agree to. If it's to deny, you need to make sure that you put on the record your evidential reasons for denial, what parts of the burden of proof you think the applicant did not meet. Because if that is the decision, we have to write a letter that sets forth those, and I can't make them up. So that's a long speech, but that's the way quasi-judicial proceedings work.
Thank you very much. Does anyone have any questions of Cliff at this moment on what he just said?
No, I guess, Cliff, the question I'd have is disclosure. Again, what I did, I attended the February 27th Planning Board meeting here at Ponce. This was on the agenda. My goal was to listen to the citizens and what the citizens had to say. The presentation is exactly the same presentation that we currently have now, and there's no facts that I see currently that was at the Planning Board meeting that is any different than what we currently have.
Okay, thank you. Before we move to every council member's disclosures of ex parte communications, if any, I do want to identify the parties. I know we have our town represented by Patty Rippey, you're here, and I know that we do have representatives of the applicant here. My question in the audience is, do we have any attorneys who are here who intend or wish to participate in this matter representing a party? Is there anybody here? Okay. Now, as far as ex parte communications, I'm going to go down the line of our council members to disclose on the record. Each member must disclose any ex parte communication. So may I start with you, Mr. Villanella, councilman?
I'm sorry, can you repeat it?
Of course. Have you had any communications outside of this hearing about this matter that you need to disclose on the record?
No, nothing of any substantial nature.
You have not had any? No. And Skip, anything?
No, I've disclosed mine.
I asked Stephanie to send me the tape, and I listened to the meeting tape probably three times. So that's it.
Okay. And
no, I have none.
I, on the other hand, have quite a bit to disclose.
The emails.
Okay.
I forgot them.
Now, as everyone can see from attachment 8 of the staff report on this agenda item, there were numerous resident inquiries and concerns. Some were in the form of emails to me that I immediately forward to our town staff for their review and response. Now, all written communications received on the project have already been provided to the clerk and are a part of the public record. In addition to the emails, at the request of residents living on Ocean Way and Sailfish, I met with 30 people on Monday, April 1st, at 4:30 at the community center. The town clerk, as part of the public record, has the sign-in sheet I created for those in attendance, along with a copy of the statement that I prepared and read to the residents, setting forth the parameters of a meeting of this nature. Both documents are with the clerk as part of the record. Further disclosures include two conversations over the years by phone with applicants of the individual Simone Johnson about the application involving this project, but these go back to March of 2022 and again May of 2023. The substance was of their application for Sailfish Marina and town's expirations of their permits. These conversations were about this project, but were during prior applications, but I thought it best to share that with you. In addition, I have spoken with our town principal planner, Patty Rippey, about this application, as well as our town manager, Mike Disher. And as part of my work as your mayor, just in general, I do drive down our streets, including Ocean Way and Sailfish, to simply observe. So that is my disclosure.
Then I need to add that I met with Mr. Disher and Patty and Darren a week ago Monday to discuss some of my concerns and statements about being proactive, etc.
Okay, so I think we can begin. Ms. Rippey, are you prepared to begin? Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council members. As you know, we are here to for you to consider Final Development Plan 39-2023 for 4912 Sailfish Drive for a proposed Sailfish Marina. The applicant is requesting approval of the Final Development Plan. The project includes the construction of a 34-slip marina to include a 17-space parking lot, 216-square-foot bathroom building, stormwater retention areas, and 550-linear-foot wooden walkway. Mr. Mark Corrett with Zeb Cohen and Associates is representing Blue Water Realty Advisors, the property owner today. The application was submitted on June 26, 2023 and reviewed by the development review team. The application was revised to address technical requirements of the land use. To address technical requirements of the land use and development code, with the final revised application submitted by the applicant on October 11th, 2023. The landscape and tree removal and protection plans were reviewed and recommended for approval by the Cultural Services Board on February 5th, 2024, in accordance with LUDC Section 4.10.5. Also, in accordance with LUDC Section 6.6.6, Development Plans and Subdivisions, the Planning Board shall review and make a recommendation for the Town Council's final consideration. On February 27th, the Planning Board continued the agenda item to its next regularly scheduled meeting, requesting additional information to ensure that the applicant and staff considered every alternative for reducing traffic impacts to Sailfish Drive and surrounding roads. On March 26th, the Planning Board recommended approval of the final development plan with amended conditions in the development order by a vote of 3-2. For the property overview, this is a 5.24-acre vacant parcel, and it's part of the Ponce de Leon Park subdivision plat that was originally created on September 14, 1949. The subject property is west of Sailfish Drive and south of Beach Street and Rains Drive. The property is in the B2 Riverfront Commercial Zoning District and the Riverfront Overlay District. The future land use designation is Riverfront Commercial. And here on the screen, you'll see the area outlined in blue is the subject site. The surrounding zoning districts include multifamily, single family, and riverfront commercial. The B2 Riverfront Commercial Zoning District allows marine-related facilities and businesses such as marinas. The riverfront commercial land use category includes land and water-oriented uses and activities. Recreational and working waterfront uses shall be given preference in this land use category, especially those that are water-dependent and water-enhanced. Representative uses within the riverfront commercial designation include wet boat storage, such as marinas and boat basins. And this image on the screen shows the zoning districts surrounding the subject property. The Riverfront Overlay District encompasses all of the B2 and MF2 zoning districts east of the Halifax River and west of Sailfish Drive. The purpose of the Riverfront Overlay District is to ensure that development within this area promotes the open, water-oriented character of the riverfront, protects environmental resources, and ensures a high quality of design. The ROD is consistent with the town's comprehensive plan goals, objectives, and policies to create a pedestrian-oriented riverfront environment, to ensure access to the riverfront for pedestrians and bicyclists, and to preserve the historic setting and unique character of this area, including the scenic roads of Beach Street and Sailfish Drive. And here you'll see on your screen, the Riverfront Overlay District is the area outlined in red. The proposed development, as I mentioned earlier, is the proposal to construct a 34-slip marina, and it will consist of two piers with a walkway crossing between the piers. The single-story bathroom building is 216 square feet, which falls within the maximum building size of 5,000 square feet for the B2 zoning district. The bathroom building and parking lot covers approximately 5.6% of the parcel, which complies with the maximum lot coverage of 40% for marine-oriented uses in the B2 zoning district. The impervious area is calculated at 6.5%. The entrance and driveway is located at the intersection of Sailfish Drive and Ocean Way Drive. The wooden boardwalk from the parking lot to the boat piers and bathroom building is approximately 550 feet long. The site will be accessible to pedestrians to enjoy the wooden boardwalk from the parking lot to the boat piers along the waterfront. There is no boat ramp proposed for this marina, and no boat trailer traffic will access this site. No fishing will be allowed on the site. DEP permit number 02788-002-004-EI prohibits the following activities. Hull cleaning, painting, or other external maintenance is prohibited. Boat maintenance or repair activities that require vessel removal from the water or removal of major portions of the vessel, including the engine, for routine repair or maintenance is prohibited for the life of the facility. Overboard or through hull discharge of trash, human or animal waste, gray water, or fuel shall not occur at the docking facilities, and slips shall not be live aboard. Here is an image of the site plan layout. This is the entire site plan layout. I broke it up into two pieces. It's a little difficult to see. So here is the entrance from Sailfish Drive, aligning with Oceanway Drive and the Shell parking lot. And you can see the wooden boardwalk starting at the parking lot going towards the waterfront. And, oops. And this is the northern part of the property, northwest side of the property with the boat slips and the restroom facility. Pursuant to LUDC Section 4.7.8, Table 4-19, one space per two boat slips is required for marinas and similar uses. There are no other accessory structures, such as a restaurant or retail shop, that would require additional parking. The applicant proposes to meet the requirement with 17 parking spaces, one of which is a handicap space. Traffic impact analysis. New development applications that are subject to concurrency review shall submit a traffic impact analysis pursuant to LUDC Section 5.9. The analysis shall follow methodology and procedures of the Transportation Impact Analysis Guidelines established by the local transportation planning organization. In this case, it's the River to Sea Transportation Planning Organization. A TIA provides information on projected traffic for a proposed new development. That is, it measures the anticipated traffic volume to be generated by a proposed development against the existing capacity of the roadway network. A TIA evaluates the impact of proposed development at full build-out on the multimodal transportation system, including roads, transit, bicycle, and pedestrian facilities. Lassiter Transportation Group conducted a traffic impact analysis using the Institute of Transportation Engineers Trip Generation Manual 11th edition for the following roadway segments: Beach Street from Sailfish Drive to Peninsula Drive, Rains Drive from Sailfish Drive to Peninsula Drive, Oceanway Drive from Sailfish Drive to Peninsula Drive, and Sailfish Drive from Oceanway Drive to Beach Street. The TIA concludes the proposed development will generate 2 morning peak hour trips and 7 evening peak hour trips. This translates to 3 to 4 vehicular trips per hour daily, which equals a total of 82 trips in a 24-hour period. Under existing conditions, the study area intersections and roadway segments currently operate within the adopted level of service. Under 2025 build-out conditions, the study area intersections and roadway segments are expected to operate within the adopted level of service. The proposed marina will not exceed the capacity of or reduce the level of service for the affected roads. In response to traffic concerns, the police department and planning staff are investigating traffic calming options now, including a resident parking permit program, additional four-way stop intersections, and altering the traffic flow on Sailfish Drive south of Beach Street to one-way travel from north to south. I'm happy to report that the police department is currently moving forward with installation of a four-way stop at Oceanway Drive and South Peninsula Drive. drainage, and utilities. Based on stormwater calculations completed by Zeb Cohen and Associates, adjacent properties will not be impacted by stormwater runoff. The proposed stormwater system complies with the level of service standards pursuant to LUDC section 5.9.4. The first inch of rainfall will be retained on site. Post-development conditions shall maintain pre-development conditions, and peak discharge from post-development conditions shall not exceed peak discharge from pre-development conditions for a 100-year frequency storm. Additionally, the City of Port Orange determined that the proposed connections to the water and sanitary sewer lines comply with applicable utility regulations. The bathroom building will be connected to water and sanitary services that currently serve the area, and the bathroom facility will include a private grinder pump as required by the City of Port Orange and includes an agreement for operation and maintenance with the City of Port Orange. Tree protection and removal plan. The applicant is proposing to preserve 118 trees, including 16 historic trees. The applicant is proposing removal of 139 trees, 4 inches diameter at breast height or greater. Of the 139 trees, 49 are specimen trees, which means they are 8 inches diameter at breast height or greater. Of the 49 specimen trees, 32 trees are 18 inches at diameter at breast height or greater, which require Cultural Services Board approval. The 49 specimen trees proposed for removal must be mitigated at a 1-to-1 ratio as additional trees are being preserved outside of the designated protection zones on the property. The tree protection and removal plan was recommended for approval unanimously by the Cultural Services Board on February 5th, 2024. And here is an image on the screen of the tree protection plan. Again, a little hard to see at the scale. Landscape plan. Landscape standards specific to the Riverfront Overlay District, in addition to LUDC section 4.10.3, apply to this project location. In accordance with LUDC section 4.10.3.C, 4 trees and 20 shrubs are required within the buffer yard for every 100 linear feet along the property boundary. In this case, that is equal to 88 shade trees and 440 shrubs. The plan proposes 46 shade trees, 13 sable palm trees, and 367 shrubs, in addition to existing trees and vegetation adjacent to single-family uses along Sailfish Drive, around the driveway, parking lot, bathroom building, and stormwater retention areas. The landscaping area abutting Sailfish Drive complies with the Riverfront Overlay District protected area restriction of 35-foot buffer to maintain the existing tree canopy and other non-invasive natural vegetation. All proposed tree and plant species are native or Florida friendly and will be able to survive with minimal maintenance once established. And here is the landscape plan. I broke this into two pieces so you could see the highlighted green areas are where new landscaping will be placed. And you also can see the shaded area along Sailfish Drive. That's the 35-foot buffer where existing trees and vegetation are currently located. Also, if you'll notice on the north of the property, I walked the property with the landscape architect from Zeb Cohen and Associates, and there are some areas along that north existing buffer that need to be have additional landscaping in there to meet the requirements. And then the other area that will have new landscaping is around the bathroom building as required by the LUDC. Okay. An environmental assessment was conducted on April 27, 2021 by FWC authorized agent Mallory Tatum. No wetlands were observed on site. The wildlife survey concluded that the only potential listed protected species on the subject property would be gopher tortoise. No gopher, tortoise, or burrows were observed at that time. Per state regulations, a follow-up gopher tortoise survey will be conducted a maximum of 90 days prior to any work on site. The architectural elevations for the bathroom building comply with the riverfront overlay district as well as the LUDC. The project site contains the Elwood Shell Mound, Site 8 VO7061. The site contains a shell midden dating to the St. John's period of Florida's prehistoric past and was occupied sometime between 500 BC and 1564 AD. The Phase 2 archaeological investigation of the site was completed in June 2004 by Florida Archaeological Services. They were recommended that no ground surface disturbance, such as tree removal, grading, utility work, or any other construction-related activities, take place in the area of the shell mound. And just for reference, this is the area, the entire area of the shell mound. You can see approximately where the arrow is pointing is the top of the mound, but the entire area actually spills over, for lack of a better word, onto the MF2 property. So it is takes up quite a bit of space on that property. According to the applicant, at some time in the future, the landowner may do a phase three investigation, which would allow for more data recovery. Following the data recovery, the landowners may not have any more restrictions on the property, depending on the results and the extent of the excavation. The current site plan is for work adjacent to the mound and is required by the state of Florida. There will be a state-certified archaeological monitor on site during construction in case anything of significance is found. The applicant is responsible for hiring the state-certified archaeological monitor. Also, according to FDEP Environmental Resource Permit number 0278802, General Condition 14 requires that if any prehistoric or historic artifacts are encountered at any time within the project site area, the permitted project shall cease all activities and contact the Florida Department of State Division of Historical Resources Compliance Review Section. At its February 5th, 2024 meeting, the Cultural Services Board recommended that the applicant place one or more signs near the mound explaining its historical significance and warning to not trespass. In response, Condition 3 in the development order requires the developer to place one or more signs near the mound explaining its historical significance and warning the public to not trespass on the mounds. The B2 Commercial Zoning District, as noted earlier, allows marine-related facilities and businesses such as marinas. The riverfront land use category includes land and water-oriented uses. Recreational and working waterfront uses shall be given preference in this land category, especially those that are water-dependent and water-enhanced. The Riverfront Overlay District is intended to provide additional regulations to the B2 and MF2 zoning districts lying east of the Halifax River and west of Sailfish Drive to assure that development within its area promotes the open, water-oriented character of the riverfront, protects environmental resources, and ensures a high quality of design. Permitted uses and structures. The permitted uses shall be those allowed by the underlying B2 or MF2 zoning districts, respectfully subject to the regulations and restrictions of those underlying zones in addition to the ROD. Development requires a riverfront development permit in compliance with the ROD criteria. So upon review, The proposed development is consistent with the purpose and intent of the ROD. The proposed development is consistent with the Ponce Inlet Comprehensive Plan. The proposed development meets the concurrency management requirements of the town's LUDC. The site is physically suitable for the project design as determined by the regulations contained in the LUDC. In particular, considering resource protection, tree and native vegetation preservation, buffers, and landscape requirements, and flood damage prevention. The proposed development will not adversely impact wetlands and or plants and animals that are listed as federal and or state endangered, threatened, or species of special concern. The architectural style and building scale of the bathroom building reflects the historic setting and the unique character of the ROD area. The site and landscape design of the proposed development within the ROD is consistent and coordinated with the historic setting and the unique character of the environment of the ROD area and does not adversely impact development within and adjacent to the ROD. The proposed development retains or enhances the visual quality of the site. The open space within the proposed development is coordinated with existing and planned interconnected open space systems. The proposed development is designed to relate to other existing and, if known, planned projects and systems such as pedestrian ways, open space areas, landscaping patterns, lighting concepts, and traffic circulation. The proposed development is designed to provide physical access to the riverfront and other activities. Buildings and structures abutting or adjacent to Front Street or any extension to said street are designed in such a manner as to allow views of the riverfront from Front Street and from adjacent developments or properties. The proposed development preserves the existing tree canopy in this district, which creates the special ambiance of this area and controls the density of development and does not exceed 35 feet in height. The treatment of the river edge shall be visually appealing when viewed from the river and the land. And then a review of the final development plan criteria is as follows. It is in compliance with the characteristics of the site and the surrounding area. It meets concurrency for traffic circulation, potable water, sanitary sewer, stormwater drainage, solid waste, recreation, and open space. The nature of the proposed development, consistency of the proposed development with the comprehensive plan, conformity of the proposed development with code and regulations, and finally noting concerns of surrounding landowners and other affected persons. Which I'd like to note as part of the packet, staff responded to many inquiries and concerns from residents and up into and including yesterday and today, which was forwarded to you as well as the residents that were concerned about traffic and other issues. And I'm happy to discuss that further. It's a lot of information, though, to actually go through up here. But the recommendation, based on the finding of this report, is that staff recommends approval of the proposed Sailfish Marina final development plan subject to the following seven conditions. Number one, if the floating walkway parallel to shore is to be used to satisfy the pedestrian access requirements of the Riverfront Overlay District, it must be ungated, ADA compliant, and open to the public. However, if the walkway is not or cannot be open to the public, a finished ADA compliant walkway shall be constructed on the adjacent upland to connect the two new wooden walkways so as to provide continuous pedestrian access along the water. Number two, the parking lot turnaround areas at the west end of the parking lot shall be used for emergency purposes only and shall not be used for parking vehicles or trailers of any kind. The turnaround areas shall be marked accordingly with appropriate striping and signage for that purpose. Number three, the developer shall place one or more signs near the mound explaining its historical significance and warning the public to not trespass on the mound. Number four, the developer shall provide a security gate at the entrance to the proposed marina at Sailfish Drive. Only boat owners will have access to the parking lot either through a key fob or other secure method. The gate shall remain in place permanently. Pedestrians shall have access to the site from Sailfish Drive. Number five, any additional future uses outside the parameters of this final development plan shall be reviewed through the development review process pursuant to LUDC Section 6.6.6, Development Plans and Subdivision Plats. Number six, during construction, a protective track pad will be placed across Sailfish Drive from Oceanway Drive to stabilize the entrance, protect the sand-based roadway surface, and to prevent tracking mud onto public streets. The construction vehicles entering the Sailfish Drive entrance will be providing equipment and material for the construction of the retention areas and shell parking lot. All other materials for the boat, piers, boat slips, and bathroom building construction will come in by tractor-trailer flatbeds via Beach Street to the Sea Love Boatworks north of Down the Hatch, and then assembled and launched by the travel lift at Sea Love and floated to the construction area. Number seven, the developer shall restore Sailfish Drive to its original condition after construction is complete and prior to certificate of completion. That's my presentation. If you have any specific questions.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Do we have any specific questions of Ms. Rippey before we move on to the applicant? Yes,
I do.
Please.
First of all, good job. That was a lot to say. The first question I have, and it might be something from Mr. Shepherd, but I'm not sure. Is there any law or ordinance that would prohibit the public from utilizing a public road to access Sailfish Marina, Posada Hotel Museum, Lighthouse Museum, Hidden Treasures Restaurant, Marine Science Center, etc.?
No, sir. If you own a parcel, you have the right to access your property from the abutting right away.
Okay. I have a few more. I'll bounce around, so I do apologize. So you did address the four-way stop.
Yes, sir.
Which I think is fantastic. What is residential parking permit program? What is that?
So that would it, and we're researching it, but they have it in other areas where there's a large tourist base, and so that would allow residents, for instance, on Oceanway Drive, if they had a parking permit, they could park on the street. But if you were parked on the street without a permit, you could be towed.
Okay. So that would distinguish someone living on Ocean Way only. And again, if it was someone else, the vehicle would be towed.
Correct.
Okay. Over in recommendations, the floating walkover, can that not be determined now? And again, I apologize to you guys, but to me, if this is the final site plan, there should be a determination whether there's going to be a gate and there's going to be another walkover for the residents, or do we know that?
Oh, we're not requiring them to have that nailed down right now because that work will be done through a different vendor or contractor, I guess, is
right.
The word I'm looking
but
for.
But before the C of O is issued, that will be determined.
Absolutely.
And it will be built. So for my clarification, when you say Upland, would it be beside the current walkover that would be for the marina boat owners or next to the water, or would it be further?
It would be
up
along the seawall. So that right now the wooden walkway goes from the parking lot to the first pier and then goes in between the piers over the water and then back up to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. So if that was not able to be ADA compliant, then they would have to start from where it's on the land and go against the seawall up to the bathroom.
Okay. Turnaround you covered. Let's see. Security, the security gate. question on that, and again, I know that that just came about, but if you look on the final engineering plans, the gate that they have on here, from the way it appears to me, is it's only across one lane. Should that not be across both lanes? Because as we know in Ponce Inlet, especially at night, people decide to drive around. So I guess my question would be, is that a single gate or is that going to be a double gate?
That will be a double gate. That rendering was done prior to you know, the planning board meetings and, okay, and the, you know, what staff has tried to respond to issues and concerns with. So when they submit for their construction, that will have to show on that.
Okay. Hang on one second. Okay, and again, you covered it, but I do want to ask the question. So everything that will be constructed as far as, we'll say, in the water, you know, the boat slips, however they're constructed, that's all going to be done at the Sea Love Marina or boatyard, whatever it's called. The only thing that heavy equipment will be coming down Ocean Way would be for grading purposes, the shell road, the concrete, I'm going to call it the concrete parking pad, mm-hmm, for handicapped. But, and then what about the pad for the restrooms?
That will be done from the north construction entrance from Front Street, which, okay, will also have a construction pad
so
at that site.
I'm going to say very minimal, but I know it's going to be construction. But
it will be.
Majority of it will be done off-site at the boatyard.
Correct.
Okay. Mayor, that's it for now. I might come back with some
thank
more.
You. Thank you. Thank you. Joe?
A question. I keep coming back to the expansion of Front Street as the option with regards to Sailfish. Do we know the length of M2?
To
stretch it from where it ends today through the M2 parcel, do we know how many feet that is, how many linear feet that is?
Property is, from memory, is probably about 230 to 240 feet across. Mm-hmm. However, based on conversations with the town attorney, we can't require them. They could mm-hmm come across that property with deeds, but we cannot force them to. They have the right to access.
I understand that, but
yes.
I'm wondering if do we have the ability to suggest or an analysis of the true cost differences between doing this through Sailfish and the incurrences of that compared to running through and completing Front Street. Have access to the property.
We can't require them to. We've brought the topic up, but they would like to move forward with their project as submitted.
So there's no way that we could actually encourage them, if that's the case, to look at.
I would just say we can't require them.
All right. So do we know the length of the driveway there between the facility itself and Sailfish, the number of linear feet?
I believe when the topic came up, when we discussed it with the applicant, one of the reasons they were not in favor, besides the fact of their access rights, was that it was going to be approximately 900 linear feet. And there's the obstacle of the mound as well to deal with.
Go around it.
Yep.
Mayor, would you mind if I jumped in? I just want to say something. We do have the applicants here, and so some of these design decisions and costs, I think it's more appropriate for them to answer since they are right here. Staff's role in this was really just to see if it meets code. You know, and when Patty says we can't require it, that's because We don't have a criteria based on the cost. You know, we can certainly have discussions. The council can certainly ask. But that those questions would probably best be directed to the applicant.
I mean, I personally would like to flush this particular item out with the developer, because I mean, over the years I've been involved in construction projects. Not that I'm the developer, but it appears to me, on paper, that it would be less of an infringement on a scenic road to go through and expand Front Street as access over the M2 property. Since that property is owned by the same owner, and there's probably going to be some future development in it, I would think that the developer would want to consider doing it today as opposed to putting it off. There are, I believe, that on the M2 property, there are several slabs that were poured back around 2004, 5, and 6 for multifamily dwellings. And over the years, that's been covered over with dirt to prevent runoff of the water into the river. So I'm just wondering if we have the ability to look at all the angles on this and understand the best way for both parties to proceed.
Well, we do have the applicant here. And when the applicant testifies, or when the applicant presents, you'll have the opportunity to ask all the questions and make suggestions. Okay. So thank you. Thank you. Are you done, Joe, anything else?
Not at this moment.
Okay.
Just to piggyback on some of the things that Skip called, but first, thank you. The last meeting Monday was very proactive, and I thank you for my four-way stop sign. I don't know how many years we've been asking for it, but now is time for it. The second thing, the conversation was Sailfish Drive being one way.
Bill, in the mic.
I'm sorry. You talked about looking into that. We talked about some properties that had to sell on Sailfish because of encroachment on properties. Hopefully that will come to pass. The other thing is, I'm going to ask this of the applicants. One of the concerns Skip brought up today about the south gate not being open for traffic. Well, it has been open for traffic for the 24 years that we have lived here. It's been bicycle traffic, pedestrian traffic, motorcycle traffic. My concern is there, and I'm going to ask the applicant, my concern is the traffic that will be developed, not in the gate, because I know they're not going to use a punch system, because the punch system, in 1 week, every single person in Ponce Inlet will have the punch code. So they're going to be going to a fob system or something that, or something that can be changed weekly or daily. But my concern is the opening in the pedestrian side, because I have had to move out of the way of e-bikes, bicycles, blowing through that little opening next to the gate for pedestrians to make it ADA compliant. They need to be aware of that just by taking that traffic person and having them sit on a Saturday or a Sunday where that gate is on the south of the park, because it's dangerous. And that's my concern that could happen with Sailfish Drive. And I'm going to bring it up. But I'm glad Skip brought it up ahead of time, because it is a concern. They've been around in Ponce Inlet, if I can remember the year, since about 2013, Mr. Shepherd. And they know the LUDC. They know the comp plan, because they were actively involved in that previously. So I think your presentation is 100% on in what you did concerning that they're consistent with the LUDC and the comp plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Gary?
Well, just almost the same comment, because this is one of the most complete submittals I think I've ever seen. And working with the planning board and the staff, you've done a wonderful job here, and you've created the conditions that should make construction a reasonable entity without too much mess of the surrounding area. So I thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I think at this time,
Mayor,
we're done.
Just one thing. I want to get this on the record for the benefit of all of you. Ms. Rippey, your conditions, seven conditions, include the two that the planning board recommended. Conditions four and five are included in the seven.
Yes,
so
sir.
If they make a recommendation for approval with those conditions, it would include the planning board's recommendations.
Okay.
Thank you,
Clint. Mayor, can I circle back just 1 second? And Bill brought it up. He touched on it. The selfish, and that's one I missed. In here, there was discussion about selfish becoming a one-lane road. Is that continuing on? Because I know that is a town issue, not a builder issue. Is that something that we're looking at? Because, and again, my concern is just because of this one project, the residents on selfish need to be included.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, I saw that in the notes. And not saying it's right or wrong or indifferent, but it would be like somebody saying we're going to make South Atlantic one way,
right,
and everybody leaves Peninsula. There's more people involved than just the marina aspect. Mm-hmm. And also, too, you know, with the new Posetta Hotel, you know, they have their exit coming out on Selfish.
Right.
And it wasn't addressed then. So there's a lot of concerns about one ways and that type of thing. So I just want to make sure that
that's
was on the
fine.
Table.
That's a larger discussion,
right,
that is independent,
exactly,
really, of this. But okay. Thank you.
And
thank
that,
you.
And that was part of the discussion that I had with both Darren and Patty and Mike last
okay.
Exactly what you just said.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm going to invite the applicant up now. Thank you so much.
Good afternoon. That's the part that I rehearse because I normally start with good evening. So I'm a big fan of the 2 o'clock start time. So good afternoon. My name is Mark Corrett. I am the director of planning for Zev Cohen Associates. I'm a member of the American Institute of Certified Planners. I have had over 36 years of experience representing both public and private sector clients in Volusia County, throughout the state, and in North Carolina. My professional address is 300 Interchange Boulevard, Ormond Beach. I have here with me today Alex Rinaldi. Alex is a representative of the ownership, and I have with me Katie Deering, professional engineer, and she's a senior project engineer with Last Earth Transportation Group. She prepared the traffic impact analysis that's in your report. I want to thank Patty and Darren and Mike. As you guys indicated, that staff report was extensive. And the presentation was thorough. We've been working through this with staff. I've worked with three different planners, Mr. Disher, Adam Mendenhall, Darren, and of course Patty as part of staff. So we've been going through this for some significant amount of time, working through all the issues in the Land Development Code. You heard that extensive report, and you've heard that we meet all of the Riverfront Overlay District criteria. We meet all of the final development review criteria. We have received a positive recommendation from the Cultural Services Board. The dates were given as February 5th. We received a positive recommendation from the Planning Board on March 5th. We accept all of the conditions in the recommendation portion of the report. I just want to make one really minor clarification. And you, Mr. White, you hit on that in your comment. Almost everything will come through Beach Street, will go particularly associated with the waterward improvements, so we'll go on travel lift onto watercraft and brought down. The improvements associated with the bathroom, all of that will come down through the construction entrance from the north.
Gotcha.
And so with that, we request your consideration and your approval. We think this project is
credit to the town of Ponce Inlet, and we look forward to seeing its construction. I do want you to know that from our perspective, we've been, as I indicated, we've been going through this for a number of years. We have had permits in hands from FDEP for a considerable amount of time as we've gone through this process. Those permits will actually be expiring within less than a year. And so it is of great interest to us to be under construction prior to those permits expiring. In addition, we can't obtain our Army Corps permits until we have an uplands permit from the town of Ponce Inlet. So we have a great deal of interest in the expeditious approval of this project. We'll be here to answer any questions that you might have of us now or later on.
Thank you. I'll start with Councilman Villanella. Do you have any questions?
Well, I'm sure you've heard my concern with regards to extending Front Street as opposed to coming in off of Sailfish. I would like to know if it's possible for you guys to provide some kind of a comparison for us to understand, not necessarily the cost basis of it, but the considerations of, let's say, a situation where any kind of an EMS situation arises. Getting through Sailfish with a EMS vehicle, doing a turnaround, how is that going to be functional as opposed to coming down Beach Street to Front Street and just, you know, direct access back out again to take some kind of a situation out to a hospital location? That's number one. Number two is just the ease of going across Front Street would seem to be much less of a burden on the citizens over on the adjacent streets, and then, of course, coming across Sailfish. So I think there's a lot of ancillary considerations that I would encourage you to reconsider or look at and provide an analysis for us to really understand this in a lot of detail, what the better solution would be.
Well, I respond to those things this way. First of all, in terms of the access to the fire department and the turnaround, this was reviewed by your staff. It was reviewed by your fire marshal. It was found to be in compliance with the town's land development code, and it was found to be in compliance with the Florida Fire Prevention Code. There will be fire suppression systems on each of the docks. So there'll be a standpipe system. There's going to be a hydrant that will be installed. That's a requirement of your land development code. We've complied with those requirements, and that is the extent of our obligation to do so. So we ask for your approval tonight without delay. If afterwards, I will talk to my client. If he authorizes me to expend funds to develop those costs and bring those back to you in order to satisfy your curiosity, I'd be very happy to do so.
Anything else?
That's it for now.
Yes.
Yes. Parking, 17 parking spots, and how many, 34 boat slips, I think, something like that. Once the parking lot is full, will it be parking on the grass?
This is, as you know, it's going to be gated. All these people will be customers or clients. They're going to understand what the rules are and where and how they're allowed to park. They're not going to be allowed to park anywhere but in a parking space.
Right. Once those parking places are taken up, they will be moving to where?
Well, they could move up to the northern property owned by my client and park in that location. That will be made aware to them if there is available parking. You may be aware, though, individuals have boats, it's not likely that all of them are going to be there at all the time.
And I guess
and certainly
that, but people, let's just say what if.
Right, and people will be instructed that they're, you know, if they're going out to a boat, you know, on a boating trip with themselves and several of their friends, that they're not to all arrive in their individual vehicles. And,
so enforcement. Enforcement, this is getting to the big part. So enforcement of this, will our